the yard. Stick it in your ear.
All right. Thanks a lot.
You're in tune to WPFW in Washington and WBAI, New York. Welcome to the 52nd Annual National Day of Mourning. We will be broadcasting live from Coles Hill, Plymouth, Massachusetts.
To our elders who teach us of our creation and our past, so we may preserve Mother Earth for ancestors yet to come, we are the land.
This is dedicated to our relatives before us, thousands of years ago, and to the 150 million who were exterminated across the Western Hemisphere in the first 400 years' time, starting in 1492.
To those who have kept their homelands, and to the nations extinct due to mass slaughter, slavery, deportation, and disease unknown to them, and to the ones who are subjected to the same treatment today, to the ones who survived the relocations and the ones who died along the way, to those who carried on traditions and lived strong among their people, to those who left their communities by force or by choice and through generations no longer know who they are,
to those who search and never find, to those that turn away the so-called non-accepted, to those that bring us together, and to those living outside keep in touch, the voice for many.
To those that make it back to live and fight the struggles of their people, to those that give up and those who do not care, to those who abuse themselves and others, and those who revive again, to those who are physically, mentally, or spiritually incapable by accident or by birth, to those who seek strength in our spirituality and ways of life, and those who exploit it, even our own. To those who fall for the lies and join the dividing lines that keep us fighting amongst each other.
To the outsiders who step in, good or bad, and those of us who don't know better. To the leaders and prisoners of war, politics, crime, race, and religion, innocent or guilty.
To the young, the old, the living, and the dead. To our brothers and sisters and all living things across Mother Earth, and her beauty we've destroyed and denied the honor that the Creator has given each individual.
The truth that lies in our hearts, all my relations.
And welcome to WPFW and WBAI's broadcast. We will be shortly going live to the National Day of Mourning 2021 from Coles Hill in Plymouth, Massachusetts. And the participants are getting ready. I know they're going to have a sacred ceremony that will not, of course, be broadcast, but we will go live to them once the rally begins. This is Eulalie's All My Relations. And in just a few moments, we're going to hear from WBAI host Daoud Andre. Many in the New York metropolitan area know him from his program, 4 to 6 p.m. on Saturdays, Haiti, Our Revolution Continues. And Daoud Andre is also a member of the Committee to Mobilize Against Dictatorship, which supports the people's struggle for justice, of course, here and in Haiti and all around the world, really a wonderful activist. And so we want to bring him to our air. Daoud, are you there?
How are you, Katia?
We are great. And let me, I neglected to mention to our listeners that you actually, for several years now, actually have been traveling to Plymouth for this commemorative day of and collective day of mourning. And so we're thankful that you're there to bring us the sights and sounds of what's happening as we wait to go to the live stream. So, Daoud, tell us about what you, well, first of all, let's get history of why you, of Haitian descent have for so many years now chosen to join and be in solidarity with our indigenous brothers and sisters up in Plymouth, Massachusetts on this day.
Well, it was greetings to the BAI audience and the PFW audience. We are here, as you said, at Uncle's Hill right now. What's going on right now is the prayer before the ceremony, the rally begins. So it's kind of a moment of silence. And for us, I found out about this event through WBAI, and it was practically the day before, maybe 16 years ago. And it was just the day before I heard the announcement, and I said, I'm going. What's happened, a lot of family don't know, but the name of our country, Haiti, this is the country our ancestors chose this name after they defeated the Europeans to liberate the country, because that is the name that the indigenous who were there, the Tainos, Arawaks, the name that they used. So although our ancestors freed the land from enslavement, they understood that this was not our land. There were people there before us. So when I found out about this, I said, well, I need to go and see what's going on. And, you know, we had heard about the lies around the Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. But we thought it was important to come. And the next year, I went alone the first year. The next year, I went with my wife, Roslyn. And the year after that, we decided to do a bus from Brooklyn to bring the Haitian community to Plymouth. And we've been coming ever since. This is the 13th year we're doing a bus from Brooklyn. Last year, a small group of us came in a van because of COVID. Mm-hmm. But as a matter of fact, I have next to me my son, Amadou, that we were speaking about yesterday. And I'm going to have him speak.
Before you do that, before you hand Amadou the phone, because we definitely want to hear his journey of attending this with you every year. But what would you say? You've obviously done such a beautiful job with him, and he has complete understanding and is no longer under this shroud of this terrible, terrible, terrible myth and the genocide that accompanies this day that people don't know about often. What would you say to parents out there who are trying to negotiate and navigate this day with their children who might have learned about the myth but don't know the truth?
Like, one step at a time is what I would say. And because the establishment over here, they need myths like this. They need lies like this to prop up the system. As the bus dropped us off, you know, on this day, it's not just the Native Americans and their supporters who are here, but a lot of folks come here to honor what they call the pilgrims, to honor, you know, it's the myth that, you know, the Mayflower hit the Plymouth Rock. You know, it's a small pebble, you know, and they tell you it's like the boat got stuck here and America was created, you know, the greatest country ever, the greatest people ever. And, you know, even like in churches in our communities in Haiti and over here as well, you have preachers who tell their flock that this is the chosen people of God, you know, and that they were hungry and God opened up the skies and turkeys rained down from heaven. This is the myth that today, you know, grown-ups are telling. So imagine for a child, you know.
Yes.
Imagine what happens in the schools.
Yes.
Imagine, you know, but when people get to come here, I think it does something to you. To understand, to hear the story on the side of the indigenous, and to understand that, you know, this is the reality. You know, these are the victims. And the victors, quote unquote, write history.
Right.
But this is the reality that happens here in Plymouth. The slogan for this organization, United American Indians of New England, it's we are not conquered. We are as strong as ever. So this is a beautiful message. And I can tell you, I would say at least 400 to 500 people here.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Right now, and
beautiful.
It's, really beautiful.
Yes. Well, could we, we'd love to hear from Amadou André,
okay.
Your son.
And, hang on a second.
Sure. Thank you.
Yes, hello.
Good morning or good afternoon, Amadou. You're on WPFW in Washington, D.C., and, of course, your beloved WBAI in New York. And thank you for being with us today, and thank you for being there with your family today and your Haitian community, being in solidarity with our Indigenous brothers and sisters. As a young person, tell us about your journey around this day, when you started to attend with your father, go up to Plymouth on the bus with your father, and how your views and perspectives have changed over those years around this holiday.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I would say, just to get straight to the point, you know, that for me, one of the big experiences when I was younger is, you know, I attended elementary school in New York. So, you know, I was subject to sort of the usual teachings of the DOE. And, you know, when you learn about Thanksgiving and this day from the context of, you know, the school books and things like that, you know, it's painted as a very positive thing, a very peaceful thing. But most importantly, it's painted as something where, you know, people were united, you know, the pilgrims and the Native Americans and the offerings of food and shelter and them getting along and, you know, the pilgrims trying to repay the debt that was owed to them. So when you learn about that narrative growing up, you really understand that, you know, maybe there is something to be thankful for about this day. And, you know, you look forward to the feasts and the sharing that goes on. So that was my initial perspective. I believe, I would say, I started attending the National Day of Mourning with my family and the bus that goes up here to Plymouth when I was around 11, 12 years old. And when you first come here, number one, it's a very different experience because even the people that you see, they look a little different from how they do. As early as eight, pardon me. That's when I first started coming here.
And just so we have context, how old are you now?
Right now I'm 21. I'm
going gosh. So you've been going for 13 years.
Quite a while.
Yeah.
I will say I didn't make last year because of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, other than that, the years that have passed by, I mostly attended them. So, yeah, when I first came here, it's a very different experience because, number one, the people that you see here as the natives who we have in our history books, they look a bit different. That's
right.
One thing. You know, it's not very realistic. And I guess another important factor is that these people look, you know, they don't look like they're happy. They don't look like they're being appreciated, and they don't look like they're being treated the way that, you know, it was said that they were treated when they first had interactions with the pilgrims. And that was an eye-opener for me.
Mm-hmm.
You learn about the history of Plymouth Rock. You learn about the atrocities that was committed. You know, it wasn't a day of peace and happiness and unity. It was a day of massacre for them. You know, that's the reality of it. And I think it's important that when we look at these historical events, we look at it not only from the perspective of the oppressor, because they're the ones who write the history books,
yes.
They're the ones who get to control the narrative, but that we get to hear about things from the perspective of the victims. Because when you learn about it from their side, you get a much clearer picture of what it is that actually took place. And you also start to see how things are the way that they are today. Because it's even like with this group meeting of people, this is an event that in my eyes, it should be something that's much bigger than it currently is. You know, we should have a lot more people here, and we should have a lot more citizens who really understand why this may be not a day for, you know, us to be happy or for us to feel like, you know, something good has taken place here. For me, this is a very big atrocity that took place in this country. And, you know, the grand majority of us don't look at it that way. So for me, that has been one very big change in terms of how I look at the day overall. It's really shaped how I understand the experience of the Native Americans and how I understand those that have power in this country, you know, to marginalize, to dictate the narrative, to decide who has what, who goes where. and overall just paint things that paint them as favorable people, as saviors, as people who are good, when in reality, a lot of people have died, a lot of people have lost family, and a lot of people today are still suffering.
Wow, so eloquently put. I don't think we can add anything to that. And again, if you're just joining us, WBAI folks and WPFW folks, we are live right now with our dear brother, host of, The Revolution, Haiti, Our Revolution Continues, Daoud Andre. And right now we're speaking to, and that's heard every Saturday on WBAI, 4 to 6 p.m., and we're speaking to his son, Amadou. And
Amadou, back the phone.
Oh, he gave that. Well, tell him we said thank you. His comments were spot on. Describe to us right now, of course, not the sacred element of what is happening, because we understand this is ceremony.
Yeah, but that happened already. Right now the rally just started. We should say that this message that's happening right now to open the event is usually done by Mooneman James, but he passed away this year. This is the first day of mourning without him, and this is his daughter. No, this is his daughter. Wamsutta James started this event. That was her grandfather. When he passed on, his son, Mooneman James, he did this. And now this is the third generation that is doing it, the daughter of Mooneman James.
Daoud, we're going to go, actually. It's up. The live stream is up now. So we're going to go to the live stream, and then we're going to rejoin you after the rally as you get information to march.
No problem.
Okay, and we thank you for being with us. We'll talk to you in a bit.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And right now we go live now to the stage at the 52nd Annual National Day of Mourning from Plymouth, Massachusetts.
Religious freedom landed on Plymouth Rock. The Indians welcomed them with open arms and then conveniently faded into the background, and everyone lived happily ever after the end. Here is the truth. First, the Pilgrims are glorified and mythologized because the circumstances of the first English colony in North America, Jamestown, were too ugly to hold up as an effective national myth. No school seems to want to teach kids about settler cannibalism. Pilgrims and Indians are a much more marketable story. Second, the Pilgrims came here as part of a commercial venture. They didn't need religious freedom. They already had that back in the Netherlands. The Mayflower Compact was merely a group of white men who wanted to ensure they would get a return on their investment. When the Pilgrims arrived, on Outer Cape Cod, by the way, not on that pebble down the hill, one of the first things the Pilgrims did was to rob Wampanoag graves at Cornhill and steal as much of their winter provisions of corn and beans as they were able to carry. The writings of the colonists themselves describe these actions taking place. The next part of the mythology is true. Some Wampanoag ancestors did welcome the Pilgrims and save them from starvation. And what did we get in return for this kindness? Genocide, the theft of our lands, slavery, starvation, and never-ending oppression. It is also important to remember that the first official Thanksgiving did not take place in 1621, when the Pilgrims had a harvest time meal provided largely by the Wampanoag. Instead, the first Thanksgiving was declared in 1637 by Governor Winthrop of the Massachusetts Bay Colony to celebrate the massacre of over 700 Pequot men, women, and children on the banks of the Mystic River in Connecticut. William Bradford of the Plymouth Colony wrote of this event, "Those that escaped the fire were slain with the sword, some hewed to pieces, others run through with their rapiers. They thus destroyed 400 at this time. It was a fearful sight to see them thus frying in the fire. Horrible was the stink and scent thereof, but the victory seemed a sweet sacrifice, and they gave the prayers thereof to God, who had wrought so wonderfully for them this victory." Subsequent slaughters of indigenous people would be celebrated by a day of Thanksgiving, and yet the history books call us the savages. So why does any of this matter? It is simple. When people perpetuate the myth of Thanksgiving, they are not only erasing our genocide, but also celebrating it. We did not simply fade into the background, as the Thanksgiving myth says. We have survived and thrived. We have persevered. The very fact that you are here is proof that we did not vanish. Our very presence frees this land from the lies of the history books and the myth makers. We will remember and honor all our ancestors in the struggle who went before us. We will speak truth to power as we have been doing since the first day of mourning in 1970. That first day of mourning in 1970 was a powerful demonstration of Native unity. It has continued for all these years as a powerful demonstration of unity and the unity of all people who speak truth to power. Sadly, many of the conditions that prevailed in Indian country in 1970 still prevail today. In 1970, our average life expectancy was just 44 years. Today it is up, but for Native men, it is still 6 years below that of white people. Native women's death rate has increased 20% over the past 15 years. In 1970, the average Native yearly income was $4,347. In 2019, 20% of Native people still earned under $5,000. In 1970, our suicide and infant mortality rates were among the highest in the country, and this has not changed. We all know that racism is alive and well. All of us are struggling under the oppression of a capitalist system which forces people to make a bitter choice between heating and eating. We will continue to gather on this hill until corporations and the U.S. military stop polluting the earth, until we dismantle the brutal apparatus of mass incarceration. We will not stop until the oppression of our two-spirit siblings is a thing of the past. When the freedmen are granted equal rights by the so-called five civilized tribes who enslaved their ancestors, when unhoused people have homes, when children are no longer taken from their parents and locked in cages at the border, when the Palestinians reclaim the homeland and the autonomy Israel has denied them for the past 70 years, when no person goes hungry or is left to die because they have little or no access to quality health care, when insulin is free, when union busting is a thing of the past, until then, the struggle will continue. In 1970, we demanded an end to the Bureau of Indian Affairs. It is still a demand today. Native nations should not need federal oversight to govern ourselves or take control of our own lands. As we did in 1970, we mourn the loss of millions of our ancestors and the devastation of the land, water, and air. We condemn all acts of violence and terrorism perpetuated by all governments and organizations against innocent people worldwide. Since the invasion of Columbus and the rest of the Europeans, Native people have been virtually non-stop victims of terrorism. From the colonial period to the 21st century, this has entailed torture, massacres, systematic military occupations, and the forced removals of indigenous peoples from their homelands. Let us not forget that this country was founded on the ideology of white supremacy, the widespread practice of African slavery, and a policy of genocide and land theft. Let us not forget that under the pipelines, skyscrapers, mines, and oil rigs lie the interred bones, sacred objects, and villages of our Native ancestors. On our program will be only Indigenous speakers. This is one day when we speak for ourselves without non-Native people, so-called experts, intervening to interpret and speak for us. Today, on liberated territory, we will correct the history of a country that continues to glorify butchers such as Christopher Columbus, that makes slave-owning presidents such as Washington and Jefferson into godlike figures, and even carves their faces into the sacred black hills of the Lakota. In 1970, very few people would have given any thought to the fact that the indigenous people of this hemisphere do not look upon the arrival of the European invaders as a reason to give thanks. Today, many thousands stand with us in spirit as we commemorate the 2021 National Day of Mourning. As my grandfather said back in 1970, we are now being heard. We are now being listened to. The important point is we still have the spirit. We still have the unique culture. We still have the will and, most important of all, the determination to remain as Indians. We are determined, and our presence here is living testimony that this is only the beginning of the American Indian, particularly the Wampanoag, to regain the position in this country that is rightfully ours. In the spirit of Crazy Horse, in the spirit of Metacom, in the spirit of Geronimo, above all, to all people who fight and struggle for real justice, we are not vanishing, we are not conquered, we are as strong as ever.
We're really honored to have, this is not staying up. That's not your fault. You're a roofer, you can do it.
Get out, right now.
She's a roofer, I know that she's tough and has strong hands. All right, we're really honored to have the chairperson of the Herring Pond Wampanoag tribe with us today. Her name is Melissa Harding Ferretti, and she's a beloved sister. And again, we're just so grateful that she's here today on their territory to greet people.
Wow. Waniki Sak, Natasuis, Melissa Ferretti, Nutomas, Sikwana Makwapakwet, Ka Natai Patuxet Borndale At. What I said to you in my beloved language is my name is, or I am called Melissa Ferretti. I am from the Herring Pond tribe of Plymouth and Borndale. I wanted to start with the Wampanoag prayer, so forgive me. I'm going to ask you to pause your cameras just for 1 or 2 minutes while I recite this, if that's okay. Give you just a few seconds. All right. All cameras are down.
And of course, offering a sacred prayer there. The live stream has been interrupted for a moment. But again, if you're just joining us, you're in tune to WPFW in Washington, D.C. and WBAI in New York. My name is Katia Stitt. I'm the program director here at WPFW, and my co-conspirator, big shout out to our beloved Linda Perry, who does so much good work for WBAI and who allows us to do these things together. She, you know, we are definitely in solidarity, and it is only with her that we are able to bring you these joint broadcasts. And today is another example of that. We want to thank our dear brother, Daoud Andre, who comes to our WBAI family every Saturday at 4 until 6 p.m. And, of course, the show is Haiti, Our Revolution Continues. And, of course, we heard from his son, who began attending the National Day of Mourning in Plymouth at the age of 8 years old. What a wonderful gift, right? What a wonderful gift to give your child to say, hey, all that you read, take it out of your mind. We're going up here and you're going to see the truth. You're going to hear the truth. You're going to feel and experience the truth. And he's been doing that now for 13 years. He said he was 21 going on 22. And it's just really wonderful to give you a few books that might help you along this road. One would be Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz's An Indigenous People's History of the United States. And I would also offer Dr. Ivan Van Sertima's They Came Before Columbus. And so those are great places to start if you want to talk about the early days of what we know now as the United States. And we will be with you, be bringing you this live stream when it returns until it ends, until they start marching. And of course, we will also have Daoud rejoining us before they start marching, because he will describe what happens on the march. There are several sacred areas. Live stream is back up. We'll return. You're in tune to WPFW and WBAI.
Thank you so much. Kanipi Omu, welcome. I'm just really, really honored to be here and part of this time-honored tradition that is the National Day of Mourning. Just standing before you today in this beautiful November day, we really lucked out with our weather. I want to acknowledge and send my gratitude to the United American Indians of New England, Matoi, Wamsutta, Frank James, and others, in honor and a dedication to Munanan, James, Burt Waters, and others who have returned to the ancestors. And of course, all of you amazing humans who are here today from near and afar. I was raised here, as many of you may know, in this lovely town of Plymouth by an elder of my tribe. In Cedarville, a small village at the border, the very border of South Plymouth and Bourndale, educated in the Plymouth school system at that time, we were taught the romanticized pilgrim story. But in my tribal household, my ears were keen to the very real stories of land loss, oppression, and racism. We were taught that the Creator sees and hears all things, and that your wealth, your status, or your title was not what made us great and powerful, that it was our hearts and our actions and our intentions that truly mattered. I come to you today with an open heart, full of gratitude, love, and respect. My words cannot truly express how much our being here today means to myself, my ancestors, and my people. I give thanks to this sacred place here at Patuxent, what is known today as Plymouth, at the heart of what we call the Wampanoag Nation, and what is the traditional homelands of the Herring Pond Wampanoag Tribe. We have called this land home for thousands of years. Our ancestors are buried here, Our ancestors are buried here, and our descendants can still be found here today. We wholeheartedly recognize that we are not alone here in Massachusetts, that there are many other tribal communities and direct descendants throughout the Commonwealth. The history of Plymouth and the Massachusetts colony is complex and painful. What happened here on these lands impacted all Native nations across New England and eventually spread far and wide across this country and into the Canadian Maritimes. The spread of colonization, we know, resulted in armed conflict, murder, enslavement, rape, and dispossession of our lands, and it was a direct assault on all Native cultures and life ways. There will always be critics and those that seek to silence us, divide us, and separate us. But I and we are here today to show the world that we are not a conquered people. We are a proud, resilient, and powerful people. Well aware of our history here. We are still here today, and I stand here in peace and in solidarity. Ho, that is all.
No, we got it. It's okay.
So you're going to grab that.
Oh, okay. Here we go. This is happening in real time, as you can see. For those of you who didn't see before, the prayer was so powerful that the sound system went down. It's so good to hear the Wampanoag language being spoken here. It's really incredible. So my name is Matoi Monroe. I am Lakota. I'm co-leader of United American Indians of New England. And I'm really grateful to be here with you all today. We made it through another year. It's been a difficult year. I want to acknowledge that we have, I look out and I see so many different beautiful indigenous faces and people here, and it's really wonderful to see that. I want to acknowledge also that we have a bus from the Haitian community in Brooklyn that left at 6 o'clock this morning to be here. Thank you, Daoud Andre. We have a bus with Boricua siblings from Urban Arabex and other communities that left from Yankee Stadium at 6 o'clock this morning. So we want to welcome you all. We always love having our Taino siblings in the house. And I know that we have a big contingent of Palestinian siblings here with us today. And we always love and support you and are so grateful to have you here with us. And everyone who is here from the Four Directions, thank you for being with us. We want to thank Sunny Singh, who is doing the live streaming. I think we're back on. Okay. I want to thank Sunny Singh. I'm going to thank him twice, see? who's doing the live stream for us. And it has just been miraculous this year and last year in helping to pull all of these things together. You know, we're going to cover as many issues as we can in the time we have today. But I want to let you know, those of you here and those of you listening to the live stream, that after our speakers here in Plymouth today, and we're going to be three different places. We're up here on Coles Hill right now. After we finish a series of speakers up here, we're going to march down to Plymouth Rock or Plymouth Pebble, however you want to call it, the most disappointing tourist attraction in Massachusetts. And we're going to have another rally down there. And after we're done down there, we're going to march up to the town square, or what is sometimes called Post Office Square here in Plymouth. And we're going to have a final closing rally there. And we have a lot of amazing and powerful speakers. But after our live program, there's going to be a pre-recorded program that's going to follow the live stream as well. And that's going to have information and speakers from many important struggles, including speakers from the Mapuche struggle in Chile that we want to uplift, because you don't see that in these U.S. papers at all. A video from the Northeast Megadam Resistance Alliance. Devin Atala and Amma Bishara, who will be speaking about Palestine. Ua Haikea Maile, who's speaking about the Kanaka Maoli, or Native Hawaiian resistance. And Elena Ortiz from the Red Nation. So we wanted to, and there's other things there and lots of music also in the pre-recorded content. We wanted to give you a lot of content. We want this to be a day when you can learn so much about the indigenous struggles in so many places, and really begin to get an understanding of what's been happening in many areas. You know, we lost our co-leader, Munanim James, back in December, and dear Burt Waters back in August. we've lost thousands upon thousands of Indigenous relations to COVID-19. Many of us this past year have once again been out on the streets marching against white supremacy. And white supremacists are still walking free while Indigenous black and brown people continue to die. But Indigenous struggles never die. They can ebb and flow, and currently we are in a time of Indigenous resurgence, with things happening on so many different fronts. I hear a lot of people talking about reconciliation the last couple of years. Reconciliation to me means when you try to repair an existing relationship, like when you go to marriage counseling to try to work things out. I don't feel like we have ever had enough of a good relationship with settlers to think that something that has been so ugly can be reconciled or repaired. For example, can the damage done by residential schools ever actually be repaired?
No.
You know, not just on Orange Shirt Day, but every day. How can we stop thinking and mourning for the Indigenous children in Canada and the U.S. that were forced into internment camps called Indian residential schools or Indian boarding schools? And many people say they should not even be called schools because of what happened there. Schools shouldn't have mass graves. Hundreds of these schools were run for decades by governments and missionaries that made it their mission to kill the Indian to save the child, all too often abusing or killing the child in the process. Thousands of the children died at these institutions from tuberculosis, from medical experiments, including starvation experiments, from abuse, and from broken hearts. All of them were scarred. In Canada, some of the school grounds have been searched this year, finally, and the remains of more than 7,000 children have already been found. More than 7,000 children buried in unmarked graves. How can that be reconciled? How can you possibly make amends to the Indigenous communities that lost their children? And there are many more places left to search. The residential school survivors have long said that there were mass graves at the residential schools, but the government took no action. Here in the United States, the Interior Department has now said that they are going to try to find out how many children lie in graves at boarding schools here. And every child they find and every child whose remains have already been found need to be brought back to their families and tribal communities. We cannot rest until this happens. Bring the children home. Residential schools are not just a thing of the past. Indigenous children continue to be put into residential schools in some parts of Latin America, often run by missionaries. Adivasi tribal children in India are forced to attend residential schools where they too are stripped of their family and cultural ties. The residential schools in the U.S. and Canada may be closed now, but our Indigenous children are now and disproportionately placed into foster care. Evangelicals and right-wing organizations like the Goldwater Institute have been leading the charge to get rid of the Indian Child Welfare Act that is the only thing protecting our children from being wholesale adopted out of their own communities. These groups want to push us back to the 1960s. When at least a third of Native children were stolen from their families and put into white homes, losing their tribal connections and cultures. A third of all Native children stolen from their families. How can that be reconciled? We do not need empty words of reconciliation or apologies, and we don't need guilt either. It's too late for that. What we need is land back and reparations. And when I say land back, I mean land back. Give the land back to Indigenous people. What we need is a brand new way of thinking and being able to move properly into the future. That means Native self-determination, land back, decolonization, and Black liberation as the way forward. Land back is a popular hashtag on social media right now, but you know what? It's not a new concept that someone recently invented. Our ancestors always taught us to demand the return of our lands. The land and water are in our blood and in our bones. They're part of our bodies, and we have never forgotten that, and we will never forget that. As a starting point, return the national parks that are held by the federal government and return the lands that are held by the states to the Native nations so that Indigenous people can be free to caretake the land properly. And all these months into the Biden administration, here we are in November, Mashpee has not had their land into trust issues resolved by the Interior Department yet. So we say to President Biden, resolve Mashpee's land trust issues and respect the sovereignty of all nations. Year after year, we stand on this hill and demand an end to the colonial borders. We demand that ICE be abolished and that Customs and Border Patrol stop detaining undocumented migrants. We think not only of the Native nations whose homelands have been divided by the arbitrary settler colonial border, but also of the many thousands of Indigenous people impacted by the U.S. policies that have led them to flee their home countries in Mexico, El Salvador, Honduras, and elsewhere. And we think of our Haitian and many other relatives who have been attacked and rounded up and abused by border control. As always, we say, no one is illegal on stolen land. This year, we will also be talking again about missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirits. You know, Biden says he cares about missing and murdered Indigenous women. But if that's the case, why will he not shut down pipelines and turn his back on the energy industry? It is well known that the man camps that these pipelines and other projects bring with them are a major factor in missing and murdered Indigenous women, yet his administration does nothing to stop these projects. Whether the politicians are Republican or Democrat, conservatives or liberals, they uphold colonial rule and work hand in glove with energy corporations. They engage in intense, heavily militarized police repression against pipeline resistors. This police repression is bought and paid for by the energy corporations and the governments that work hand in glove with them. Divest from all these corporations and the banks that are funding these projects. Many of you may have heard of Line 3 in Minnesota. And some of you even went out there to join the front lines. Raise your hand if you were someone who was out there. Okay. Showing up in solidarity like that is so important. Hundreds of water protectors are currently facing criminal charges in Minnesota for standing in defense of the water, the climate, and the treaty rights of the Anishinaabeg people. They put their bodies on the line to stop Enbridge's Line 3 pipeline, a massive tar sands project that threatens Minnesota's lakes, rivers, aquifers, and wild rice beds. Police forces funded by Enbridge responded to this massive movement with surveillance, rubber bullets, harassment, pain compliance, and trumped up charges, including felony charges. In this time of climate catastrophe, governments must listen to water protectors instead of criminalizing and prosecuting them. Even though the oil is now flowing through Line 3, the fight is not over. And please, do what you can to support this struggle and all those who were arrested. You may not have heard about Line 5, which is opposed by all the tribes in Michigan. Enbridge's Line 5 pipeline transports 22 million gallons of crude oil and natural gas liquids from Superior, Wisconsin, through Michigan's Upper Peninsula, under the Straits of Mackinac and down to refineries in Sarnia, in Ontario. Originally built in 1953, Line 5 has deteriorated over the course of the last several decades and poses catastrophic risks to the tribal lands and to the Great Lakes themselves. You also may not have heard about Thacker Pass in Nevada, where the Paiute, Shoshone, and others are trying to stop a lithium mine that is situated on land where an 1865 massacre took place. The construction is scheduled to begin early next year at what would be the largest lithium mine in the U.S. and the biggest open pit lithium mine in the world. For what? For cell phones so that Elon Musk can make electric cars? We raise our voices today in solidarity with the Wet'suwet'en struggle in so-called British Columbia to stop the Coastal GasLink project from going through their lands. Last week, there was an unprecedented cascade of climate events in the province, with extreme flooding, mudslides, and communities cut off from food deliveries. Despite this, the RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, made it a priority to move in and arrest unarmed Wet'suwet'en elders, leaders, and other land defenders, including Haudenosaunee, as well as journalists who were at blockades on unceded lands that are not even covered by a treaty in Canada. Wet'suwet'en strong. We stand with them. On Vancouver Island, more than 1,000 people have been arrested for trying to defend the old growth trees there at Ferry Creek. Sepwipunk tiny house warriors continue their fierce resistance to Kinder Morgan's Trans Mountain Pipeline, and they continue to be harassed and sometimes arrested by the RCMP. In eastern Canada, violent settlers and the Canadian Department of Fisheries and Oceans continue to harass Mi'kmaq fishers who are exercising their right to trap lobsters in their ancestral waters. U.S. intervention and multinational corporations continue to wreak havoc in many countries. Indigenous people are being displaced and killed in Colombia, Mexico, and other countries for trying to stop mining and megadam projects. In Bolivia, indigenous people are forced to continue to resist the efforts of the United States to overthrow their government and reinstall an anti-indigenous puppet government. So I want to say today that individual actions are not going to save us. when corporations and the U.S. military account for 70% of the world's pollution. Promoting a narrative of individual responsibility is not going to save us. Recycling and carbon offsets are not going to save us. Hoping that capitalism will get kinder will definitely not save us. The Green New Deal is not going to save us. Only by listening to indigenous people and dismantling the systems that allowed climate collapse to happen in the first place will we be able to save the planet. Indigenous peoples have always been caretakers of the land, water, and the life therein, despite intense efforts of settler governments to stop us from doing so. And for generations, our people have been warning about climate crisis. It's not too late to achieve some climate justice on this planet, but Indigenous voices must be acknowledged and centered. One of many ways that people are working to center Indigenous voices is through education and legislation. We have been successful in getting Indigenous Peoples Day resolutions passed in many cities and towns, including Boston this past fall. Here in Massachusetts, we want you to know that we have a Massachusetts Indigenous legislative agenda that is supporting five bills. A bill to ban the use of native mascots in public schools. A bill to celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day statewide instead of Columbus Day. A bill to provide for Native-centered curriculum in all of the public schools in the state, K through 12. A bill to improve educational outcomes for Native students, and last but not least, a bill to protect sacred Native heritage. And there's a lot you can do to get those bills out of committee, so please go to maindigenousagenda.org for more information about these bills and how you can help us out. I'm going to end by returning to the concept of land back. That's something on the lips of many Indigenous people. Treaties need to be honored. Lands, including the sacred Black Hills and many more, need to be returned. A proposal, a starting place for the decolonization of our lands and a way to address climate collapse is, first, ensure that no projects can go through any Indigenous nation's land without free, prior, and authentic informed consent. Second, take all of the land that is currently being mismanaged by all settler governments, such as the national parks or the Amazon rainforest, and let Indigenous nations manage that land. That would mean the restoration of millions of acres of our lands to us. It would also mean the end of the desecration of our sacred sites, such as the Black Hills or Mauna Kea in Hawaii. Third, cancel the leases, the pipelines, the mining, and the corporate contracts, and start over. Finally, since we all live here on this planet together, and since it is the only planet that we have, everyone needs to support and listen to Indigenous peoples all over the world who are on the front lines of dealing with climate change. And I don't want anyone who hears this to give up despite how hard this past year may have been. Our ancestors are behind us every step of the way. We can fight for climate justice. We can do our best to mask up and reduce the spread of this epidemic. We can end settler colonialism. We can reclaim our lands. We are not vanishing. We are not conquered. We are stronger than ever. We have a beautiful contingent up on stage right now. Rosalba Solis, our beloved Mexica sister, has brought a message from the Council of Maya Elders, and that is going to be presented in both Spanish and English.
Ometeatzin, Tiawi. Tiawi, Tonatiu, estamos aquí reunidos de nuevo. That was my first language, which is Nahuatl. My second language, español. Solo voy a leer en español porque estamos aquí. Y la tercera es en inglés. So,